Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Schulter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, and welcome to The Butterfly Moment, the radio show in which myself, John Schulter, and my beautiful wife, Carrie Hall. Carrie, how are you doing?
I'm great, John. Thank you.
Good, good. We're back in the saddle for the second week. It was just great to be able to be here with Dylan, our producer, and you know, Carrie's in the room here again today. We're just so happy to be back, and we have a great, great guest that is really going to inspire you. He's going to inform you, and we're so privileged. You know, the fact that we're on the radio and through the internet, we are getting questions from people. We are getting contacts, and our guests just keep getting better and better and better. It's almost like the plane flies itself. And today's going to be a real butterfly moment, I think, for the show itself. Carrie and I are life coaches, and so we work with people who want to improve their lives in different ways. And so if you have a problem that you're trying to solve, a life conditions, whether it's cancer, whether it's some sort of business problem, something in the entertainment, creative problem, we have 55 minutes reserved for you in which we can talk to you about your goals and aspirations and walk you through a program that we're perfecting. And I think that you'll have a lot of fun. And I know that it'll be of tremendous value. We're working through Maria. We're working on our new Maria Savoy. We're working on a new website, which are going to be launching. We're going to have a whole media campaign. So we're going to have the radio show. We're going to have the articles in IDIS magazine, in which we have an article, Ask the Life Coach. We're working on that, getting put into other magazines throughout the nation. So many great, great things are happening. If you would like to contact us with either questions or possible guests, or just want to say hello, you can reach us at my phone number. It goes right to my cell, 586-943-HELP, H-E-L-P. That's 4357. And all of this is on the Empower Radio website. And so next week when we talk, I'll give you all my new URL and all that kind of stuff. So we would love to talk to you. We'd love to connect with you, whether it's a session, a guest, or whatever we can serve you with.
Or even suggestions about what your interests are, what you'd like to hear. If you'd like to call in with a concern or a question to John or myself, we'd love to hear from you.
That's 586-943-HELP, 4357. So what is the butterfly moment? We talked a little bit about that with our guests, and we're going to be asking the butterfly question. The butterfly moment is that special moment where a caterpillar has served his time in the cocoon, an area of darkness, of restriction, and of silence, begins to break through, and he has a realization. His realization is that he's something more than he or she thought. That he's not just a caterpillar anymore. That he is one of the most beautiful insects in the world. And best of all, he can fly. You know, I was looking on the internet, and I guess butterflies can fly cross country. They can fly cross bodies of water. They can go into different continents. I mean, they're just an amazing, amazing gift from God. And so we're going to talk about that today. I think that covers all the groundwork before we can get to the wonderful questions. We're not going to run out of material today with all of the books our guest has written. Carrie, why don't you begin by talking about our guest, author John Vespasian.
Hey, John, it's Carrie. We're so happy that you're here. And for our listeners, I'd like you to know that John Vespasian has currently 8 books on Amazon. And a lot of these books, and I know one is a novel, deal about rational living. And John also blogs about rational philosophy, psychology, and personal development. His latest book is about finding peace in our daily lives, thriving in difficult times, and 12 lessons from ancient Greece to improve your life today. John, I hope I said all that correctly. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, great. Where are you now, John? Where are you currently?
I am. I'm talking to you from the Netherlands, in Europe. So it's now it's 6:15 in the afternoon.
Oh, I bet it's beautiful
the
there.
Yeah, it's the weather is a bit cold and rainy, but other than that, it's a beautiful time.
Beautiful. Are you promoting your book there?
I'm promoting my book everywhere.
Yes.
But the truth is that the American market is the biggest one, of course, for books. Most of my readers are from the U.S., so I'm doing also interviews in other countries, but most of my readers are American.
So, John, please tell me the title of your latest book.
The title of the book is now a few weeks old. It was published a few weeks before Christmas. The title is Thriving in Difficult Times, and it's about ancient Greece. It's titled it's a personal development book, but it's a book about ancient Greece. What I have done is to go through history and philosophy and literature in ancient Greece. So we're talking 2,500 years ago, to go through all this material, to actually select stories I find fascinating, mm-hmm. and to try to find practical applications.
So yeah, it's so not a dry. What are some practical applications, John, from ancient Greece? How can we relate to what happened so many years ago? How can that help us?
Well, the idea is that human personality and the problems we face, they are essentially always the same. Because for thousands of years, the structure of human personality has not changed. The advantage of using stories and examples and philosophy from ancient Greece is that it gives you a lot of perspective. Mm-hmm. Because ancient Greece actually lasted for 1,000 years, from the 800 before Christ until basically Middle Ages. So it has a long story, and they were very successful for hundreds of years. And you can see in perspective what they did right, what they did wrong, and you can draw very interesting conclusions, which is difficult to do when you are looking at stories from last week, because you don't know the end of the story. Mm. And some people that look appear to be very successful, you talk to them 10 years later, and they're a complete disaster. Mm. And this is why I prefer to use stories from history, where you actually know the end of the story, mm. and you can draw a conclusion which is more accurate.
So the ancient Greeks thrived for 1,000 years. Other Mediterranean cultures did not. What do you think the Greeks did? I know that they used their resources wisely. They were very democratic about things. They talked. They believed in reaching a common ground. They believed in holistic medicine.
Yeah, well, this is correct. And on top of that, and I think this is the key, one of the key factors of their success, and one of the key ideas of the book, is that the ancient Greeks were extremely pragmatic. They had this high philosophy of Plato and Socrates and Aristotle and all these great names in philosophy. But you have to realize that what we know about Aristotle and Plato and Socrates comes very much filtered through the universities. When you actually read what they wrote, it's all very practical philosophy and very much down to earth. And the ancient Greeks compared to other cultures, because you have to realize that they managed to thrive for 1,000 years with a lot of hiccups, but they survived 1,000 years, while all the other cultures in the Mediterranean, like Mesopotamia, Egyptians, and all that, they basically died. They died out. Hmm. They disappeared. They went bankrupt. They were conquered by other peoples, by the Greeks in the first place. And this is because they were extremely rigid in their beliefs.
I see.
Now, let me give you one specific example that I present in the book. For most of the history of ancient Greece, the main priority, culturally and societally, and for the whole Greek civilization, was to develop business, to develop trade, to make money, to sell their production, which was olive oil. They also produced wine, and to find new markets for their products. So they didn't have any specific interest in conquering other people. They were not aggressive. Most of the wars in ancient Greek history, they were only defensive. When you see Alexander the Great, he was the great exception in ancient Greek history. The Greeks didn't care for conquering other people. They just wanted to trade with them. And this made them completely different from the other cultures in the Mediterranean. Mm. So the ancient Greeks, they opened a trading post everywhere. They settled around all the Mediterranean, and very happily they made a lot of money, they made a lot of friends, and this is the way to thrive. And this is one of the great messages of the book, that if you try to stay away from violence and to stay away from aggressiveness and try to develop your business and your career, you will do much better.
Try to find some common ground to work with your quote-unquote enemies, to work with your friends, to work with people that you trade with, to be very tolerant of other cultures?
Yeah, and this is something that is very, very much a problem today, because the ancient Greeks, for example, I mean, they had many different deities, many different gods, and many different rituals. When they went to Egypt, for instance, they have to deal with the Egyptians. They had completely different culture, completely different gods and language, but they didn't care. They just say, okay, you just do your thing, we do our things, and let's find a common ground where we can trade. And while all other peoples were trying to take over Egypt, which was very difficult because they had a very large army, the Greeks went there and they made a trade agreement. And they were able to trade very successfully with Egypt for 500 years. And this made them very, very much resilient to a crisis, because when there were some famines in the Mediterranean in the 4th century BC, most other peoples suffered hunger and disaster and misery, and the Greeks just went on because they had all these trading connections.
Mm. Very interesting.
I've got a question, if I may, John. Let's say that we were able to get our to-be new president on the phone right now. He's obviously very concerned about our economy and the programs and policies of our nation. What kind of advice would you give Donald Trump?
Well, I would I wouldn't give him any advice, but I would mention what the Greeks used to do. What the Greeks used to do is basically to allow people to thrive. They didn't have any centralized administration trying to tell everybody what to do. They would just allow people to do their own business. Hmm. And there was a very single exception in Greek history, and this is the period. There were some social disorders in the 3rd century. 4th century before Christ, people were very concerned because there were fights on the streets and this kind of stuff.
Public
disorder.
So in the end,
they had the elections, and they elected Draco. And Draco, who was a general, he had these draconian laws. This is why we use the word draconian, because it comes from Draco. And Draco, basically what he did was to change the laws, so everything was forbidden. And any infraction was basically associated to the death penalty. So if you stole some small thing, death penalty. If you had some altercation in the street, death penalty. Mm. If you broke something that's blah, 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 death penalty. So after a couple of years, the people were so fed up of Draco, because he was basically stopping all entrepreneurial activity, that they voted him out, and then they came back to the old system. Because what made the Greeks very resilient and very much effective is that they just pursued their own interest, and they built tremendous businesses. They built very beautiful art. They developed theater and literature. to a level that no other civilization in at that time was
able to. Along with medicine, some mining, and paper. They were great manufacturers of paper. So, John, I think what you're saying is that we can learn so much from history and apply these lessons that have been learned by others to help us today to in our lives.
Yes, the thread that goes through my books, all of them, is basically trying to learn rational lessons from history.
Right.
And here I have to make a distinction with other authors in this area of personal development, because I'm always trying to propose practical solutions and practical approaches to solving problems that do not involve positive thinking. They do not require a great deal of emotional investment, because I think that some people are able to remain optimistic all the time, to remain extremely balanced all the time. But for most people, this is difficult. And when you are dealing with a huge problem like severe illness, unemployment, bankruptcy, when you're dealing with a major problem, I think most of the time, for most people, it is better to focus on practical solutions rather than try to be cheerful, because then all the energy goes into being cheerful and the problems are not solved.
Very interesting, John. I think that you're, I know that they believed in taking action. The Greeks believed in taking action, and they got confidence from taking action, not just lamenting a situation or moaning about it or not being proactive.
Yes, and on top of that, the type of action they took was always clever. I mean, you don't see in these ancient Greek stories and myths, you don't see very often brute force. You don't see these fights that you see nowadays in video games where everybody's killing everybody. The typical hero in ancient Greeks is a clever guy. It's a guy who is astute, who is alert, who can identify opportunities, and he gets his way usually by being more effective than the enemies and being a bit, I would say, more driven to success than the enemies. And you see this all the time in ancient Greek stories like the Odyssey and the Iliad, that were about the war between ancient Greece and Troy. And you see the heroes, most of them, especially the great Odysseus, they were really alert, very much practical people. They were not fools.
Mm. Good point.
Well, John, I want to ask you the magic question. This kind of deals with your career as a writer and an artist. When was your butterfly moment? When was that moment that you knew, hey, I can do this. I can be a successful at this and interpreting history in a different way?
Well, that happened in 2008. It was a process. It was not just overnight. Mm-hmm. But let me tell the story, because it went little by little. I've been a reader of history and psychology and philosophy for decades, reading all kind of books. And at a certain point, I grew very dissatisfied with the books I was reading. I found them superficial. I found them contradictory. I found them very much subjective. Mm. And I thought at a certain point, I think I can do better. I think I can write books at least as good as these ones with a different perspective. Because in the end, the books I write are the books I want to read. It's just that since I cannot find them in the market, I basically have to produce them myself. And this is the story. I mean, I'm writing books in a way out of frustration and irritation. Because if someone else took the job of writing these books, then possibly I wouldn't have to do it.
That's wonderful.
But I like, John, how you take books about history and then you interpret it in a way that can help us today.
Yes, and I like history in the sense that there is a lot to learn from history, but I have to recognize that most history books are extremely boring.
So, John, are you saying your butterfly moment was really just a very long process?
Yeah, it was a long process of basically recognizing that I would never be able to find exactly what I want in the market because nobody was producing that. And then I started to write the books. And the butterfly moment also came later, also when I started to do interviews on the radio. Because I remember when I did my first interview, I was very nervous. Oh, my God, what they're going to ask. It's going to be very difficult. And I was rehearsing in the car for a week, all possible questions and answers. And in the end, it went very, very well. And this is how I started to do interviews. And then, of course, you get more experience. But the first time, I have to say, it was a bit intimidating.
Mm. John, would you say your current book is your favorite book?
Well, the latest one is always the most difficult to write.
It's like children.
Because, yes. Yes, the latest one is always the most difficult to write because it requires more research. This one is bigger than the others, or thicker. And the next one, I think, it'd be even more difficult.
You know, the great thing about what I'm hearing from you is that, number one, you discovered your passion. And number two, you found a niche in the market that you could fill. And by doing that, you know, hence come 8 books. Which is just wonderful. So, kind of in closing, what is the advice that you give young writers?
Well, young writers or young anything, because in the end, I see being a writer is a way of being an entrepreneur. Mm. But the question is, when you start something which is so complex as trying to become a writer and to sell books, which is a very difficult undertaking, you have to realize it's going to take a while until you develop a business model that works. Because writing is not only about writing, it's also about promoting. Mm. And you have to find a way to produce the books of good quality, and also you have to find a way to make the books known to the audience, which requires interviews, which requires articles in newspapers, or requires a system of promotion. Otherwise, the books basically will die. Mm. And once you have a system which is sustainable and which is working, you just refine it and improve it continuously until it becomes very, very effective.
John, I think that you're very pragmatic and very rational, but I hear a lot of passion in what you're saying as well.
Well, one thing does not diminish the other, but when it comes to making decisions for crucial things, usually I try to take some time to avoid being carried away by my emotions. Because all the big mistakes I've made in life, and there are many, they have always been that have always been caused by excessed emotionality.
Sure. You know, before we leave, can you give us some contact information for our listeners if they want to know more about you and your books and your availability for either talks or sessions like this?
Yeah, I'm very, very easy to find. All you have to do is to type my name in Google or Yahoo or whatever search engine you use. You type my name, John Vespasian, and you will find immediately my books, my blog. There are dozens of interviews in radio stations and podcasts all over the place. So, and also you will find some samples of my writing.
Kindle, we can find you at Barnes & Noble. You are on Amazon.
Yes, and the books are also available in some bookshops in the U.S. I'm spreading the distribution little by little, but it's very easy. You just type John Vespasian in Google.
Yes, and that's Vespasian.
Yes, correct.
Son of.
Yes.
Of course, you can just connect through Empower Radio. We'll have a little blurb listed on there, and you know that can kind of make sure you generate the right spelling. And so when you do your Google search, you'll be able to hit a home run and get to, you know, one of the variety of books. And, you know, I looking through them, I think there's a lot of great, great advice. If someone is thinking about going into business, I mean, all these ideas are so universal that there's a wonderful application for them in business, in our own personal lives, wouldn't you say?
Yes, actually, most of the interviews I do are on business radio. And this is because the examples I use in my book, very often they come from business people from different centuries and also from financial history. And I find the financial history very much enlightening for personal development because it shows you that people make always the same mistakes over and over again due to a wild irrationality.
Yes, hogs get slaughtered, pigs get fatter, something like that, John?
In a way, yes, but it's something you can laugh about, but you can also cry right. over.
Correct.
Because, you just turn on the radio and you see people making the same mistakes they were made 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And if you really don't learn from other people, then you have to repeat the mistakes.
Mm. What I like about what you're doing, and I haven't heard it for a long time because we live in such a contemporary society, is that there's so much to be learned by history. And we're always looking forward, and there's so much great instruction and information in the past.
Inspiration.
Yes, what I try to do in my books is basically to select fascinating little stories, which take a couple of pages. Instead of going to the dry details of kings and queens and battles and dates, which most of the time they're useless, I just try to focus on the teachings.
Mm. And the humanity of the culture.
Exactly, yes. the human aspect, yeah.
John, thank you so much for being with us and enlightening us. I feel more rational just talking to you.
Gary, many thanks for having me on your show. It has been a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it was a pleasure for us. And again, we'll keep you archived. And we welcome our guests and listeners to listen to John again and again, because I think that not only his books, but this radio show, he's got other radio shows that he's been on. That's quality time well spent. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks.
Thanks, John.
And our listeners, I want you to keep on sending emails out to us or contacting us via phone so that we can get your questions and get your suggestions. This is your show as much as it is Carrie and I's.